Welcome, everybody. Welcome. My name is Angela Durante. Today, we're here with Yannick Van Doorn from France, electroculturalist specialist. We're so excited to have you today, Yannick. Thank you for making time to be with us. Today, you are visiting with the members group of Permaculture Food Growing 101. We're here in Ontario, Canada. And we've just finished a segment in one of our classes about electroculture. And as you can imagine, it's got everyone very excited. So we're so happy that you're making time to speak with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me to your group. So I'm Yannick Van Doorn, from origin from Belgium, but I live since around 20 years in France. So I developed electroculture since around 2008, that I did experiments on big fields with farmers in France. And I observed that since like 1 year, there's a big wake up in the US and Canada about electroculture. And I'm very happy about this, that this is happening, and that community of passionate people about the rediscovery of electroculture is growing all over the world today.
Yes, and that's largely thanks to the work that you've put online for us to find, because it's been a lighthouse for us, right? You're an antenna.
Yes, maybe.
Okay, but electroculture has been around for a really long time, right? So what are the origins, as far as we know it, of electroculture being actually harnessed and used?
If you look in books about electroculture, they will speak about Abbé Bertholon in the year 1784, yeah. I think, that wrote a book about the electricity of plants and how to use first antennas, how to improve the growth of the plants. But in reality, the history is even a long way before than Abbé Bertholon. And we find traces about electroculture or kind of techniques where they plant like poles in the fields already around 600 after Jesus Christ. So it's really very old use. And there was a pope in that time that said, we don't have to use this because it's pagan, it's not Catholic. And then a few hundred years after, in the first French pope, it was Pope Sylvester, he or Gilbert. And he told that he authorized to use those poles in the fields to improve growth and protect the fields if they are accompanied with Christian prayers. So it's quite funny, and so it shows that it's a habit that was already used for improving growth in the fields already very long time. And a few years ago, I found a post of someone that doing research in about Egyptology. You see then hieroglyphs or writings on the stones that makes us think that it's in relation with the rain and the weather and agriculture. So probably they even already know about this and maybe know even how it influences the rain and the weather. I'm personally convinced that in the past, in the regions of Egypt and all those countries, that it was very green and very healthy land and fertile land, and that they knew how to make rain, how to improve rain, and that's really the key, because if you can influence the weather in a positive way, then you can do agriculture. They have the sun, they have the temperature, but they don't have the water or the rain, and nothing will replace the natural rain. You can always irrigate and but it will never be the same energy or the same way of growing than with natural rain. And that we see also in the books of even Abbé Berthelon, that they observed the relation between those kind of poles of antennas that we will call atmospheric antennas and the influence on the weather and the rain. And they used it to reduce also storms and hail. They discovered that the entrance of a temple in Egypt, but I don't remember exactly the which temple it was, but I can find that back if necessary. And there were drawings of metal poles, and they think that they were in copper. From the information they saw, and there were big metal poles at the entrance, and then there were images like hieroglyphs that were in relation with the weather, or with the rain, with the water, and agriculture. And so we think that's my hypothesis, that I think that they knew how to make rain, how to influence the weather, and that they could generate rain in Egypt and in those countries where it's now very dry. And they used also the pyramids and poles like this to influence the weather. And even today, in the books of Abbé Berthelon in the 1700s, and even from Abbé Nollet and some others, we found back information where they already observed the relation between those poles and the influence on the weather. They used that also to reduce the risks of hailstorms, and because they observed already in that time, so it's already 200-300 years ago, or 400 years ago, they observed already that the more you have such poles in a field, the less there is hail, the more little are the hailing stones, because it's directly related with the electricity in the clouds in the air, and that's today it's proven in science. It's that the more the electrical charge is built up in the cloud, and when it discharges on Earth, the bigger are the hail ice stones, and so. The more we put antennas like this, the more we will drain the charge, the electrical charge to the earth, and the less will be the size of the stones. It's amazing. I begin then also to observe this, to look where we have antennas like this. And sometimes when there is a big storm, it's like the wind and the storm is a lot less heavy or strong, very locally in the field where you have those antennas, and can be very devastating around, but not. And really, it's really energetic. You can have big winds like 100 meters further, you have like 100 kilometers an hour wind speed, and close to where you are, it's like almost no wind or a lot less. It can be very local, and that's really energetic. It's not like we think a storm is passing by or a cloud is passing by. No, it's really also energetic in relation with the energy of the of the place, of the locality. That we see really very good. And yeah, so they also see that with the forest woods. When there is a hailstorm, it almost never reaches a forest. There is almost never really damage in the forest, because probably the trees are natural antennas, and so the trees will naturally drain the energy from the sky or from the atmosphere to the earth, and also in the opposite direction. And when we cut all the trees, then you have more storms and more intensive situations like this, or more damaging situations. And if we will do probably more like agroforestry, where we cultivate and have also more trees, probably we will have also less damage and less problems. We see that in South America, in the Amazon, where they cut all the trees before the weather was kind smooth, with a lot of rain, but very regularly. And when they cut all the trees in very large areas, then it becomes dry, and then they have storms and things like that they didn't have before. So in reality, if we observe nature, we see it already happening. We see it.
So using electroculture techniques, then, are we kind of bringing that disruption into harmony? Is that, are we able to mediate some of that disruption that gets created around us, that electromagnetic pollution?
Yes. It's in my viewpoint, how to do electroculture is really in that way. It's to remediate, like you say, the disruption that we created before. We can wait, the trees are growing again, but in the meantime, we can already put antennas, other antennas. And even those antennas will even help the trees growing even better and more healthy and being bigger. Because in relation with electromagnetic pollution, that is also a big problem today in agriculture and for the health of the plants. It's not so well known, or the people are not so conscious about this. But I firmly believe that a lot of plants, animals, even people, we are really depressed by all that electromagnetic pollution. And they have proven this also in science studies in on tree growth in the Colorado, and really far away from the cities in nature. We think it's a very nice nature here, but they have already so much electromagnetic pollution that when they isolate little trees from the electromagnetic pollution with a cage, with a Faraday cage, they see that the shoots of the tree are two times bigger than the shoots of the trees that are not isolated but submitted to the electromagnetic pollution of the satellites, the radio waves, all kind of stuff that is all around us. But it's invisible to our eyes, but it's visible in the growth of the plants. But if we don't know it, we don't see it. If we know it, then we begin to see all those symptoms and all those problems. And with those electroculture techniques, it will not isolate from that pollution, but it will increase the resistance, and it will increase the good frequencies of Earth that will increase the resistance and the energy of the plant. And then we can humans too, and animals too, and then we will be more stronger against all those stresses, and we will survive a lot better. But the best would be to completely disconnect all those electromagnetic pollution or to change those. If the cell phone operators and would change some of their frequencies, we can solve already a lot of problems. But they just don't do it. It's political, it's economical, it's all kind of problems like this. Sometimes maybe they do it even by intention to harm. Maybe not. It's a discussion also. But with electroculture, it will really change a lot of. It will really increase dramatically the resistance and the growth in comparison than without. There is also in parallel another phenomenon is that the Earth magnetic field is diminishing. It's reducing since a few decades. It's really reducing by around 10%, maybe something like this. But that is really huge on a geological level or history. It's a huge decay, and that also influences the growth and our resistance in the back, because we need the magnetic energy of the Earth to grow well, because all life on Earth always grew up with that magnetic field of the Earth, and then when it changes also all life in a good or in a bad way. It's like a cycle. Probably we think that in certain times the plants and animals were a lot bigger, probably also because the magnetic field was different. But when the magnetic field is less, then plants and animals also grow naturally more little. We see that also with the cycles of the sun, of the sunspot activity. In agriculture, we see that there is like a 12-year cycle, and also in the 20-year cycles. And the biggest record of fields is mostly when there is a lot of sunspot activity, and on world level, and the less yields. Years of less yields and more sickness and problems is when there is a lot less sunspot activity and magnetic field of the Earth. And now we are in a time of quite less sunspot activity, but it's increasing. It can be a lot more. We are not at the highest point. But this influences also a lot. So there are a lot of natural energies that we don't know much about, but that we can find back in science articles too, that we see that have huge influence on plant growth, as much as the classic influences like water for fertility of the soil. Temperature, light, even light or temperature, it's also about waves. Temperature is infrared waves and it's also a radiation. It can be also kind of radiation. And light is also electromagnetic waves. And the light also, the natural light is also changing with the sun activity, but also with the atmospheric pollutions that they spray us with, this change also the frequencies of the light, because when the sunlight comes to the Earth, it passes through the atmosphere, and so it will be filtered, and so we will have. If there are a lot of metals, nanotechnology, or powders, or pollution, it will change the frequencies, and it will change also how it affects the plants. And so we see like this, that a lot of trees now, they in the summer, they decay more rapidly than normally. It's like autumn is coming sooner. It's because the leaves are more damaged more rapidly because of harmful frequencies. So it's all new aspects that we have to take care now, or to be attentive to. And electroculture is about this. It's really the domain. It's a large domain of to become conscious of all those aspects of energy, of electromagnetic waves, of magnetic waves, electrical energies, electrical fields, and all those subtle energy that are transmitted through that. Because it's like electricity from the air. It's not just we live in an electrical field, but it's also information, also subtle frequencies. Because an example, when a cloud passes by, it changes the electrical field locally. It's like an influence. Or when there is a sunspot activity, it changes also the earth frequencies, the earth low frequency radio waves that we call the Schumann waves, for example. They are really influenced a lot by sunspot activity, and now it's proven that the Schumann waves have really huge effects on plant growth and humans too. So we will talk about that also, about how we can improve that, with which techniques and which how to do
This is fascinating, and we're very much on the same page. We're following you. We've watched you use a number of these techniques in your own garden, and some of us have started to use your techniques in our indoor gardens, you know, because it's still winter here in Canada. But can we go through some of the main techniques that we've seen you use? And we'd really like to understand how are they functioning? How are they working? Because then we can move on from just applying a technique to actually understanding how to maybe modify our techniques and improve over time. Mm. So if we can start with atmospheric antennas, that would be great.
Yes. So I want just to precise that it's not... the basic principles of those techniques are not mine. They are already existed long before. I improved some techniques from the past that I experiment already since a couple of years. I have some new techniques, and I have improved, or I make rediscover all techniques with materials makes that there are some techniques that are now a lot more easy to do than 100 years ago. And Justin Christo, he was the one that really improved and promoted electroculture all over the world. In the past, in that time, there was no internet, but there we had those countries like France, England, with a lot of the world. Christophe Lowe, he used wooden poles of like six meters high. You hear me? It's okay. So he used wooden poles of 6 meters high, and then he put like an antenna on top of it with that was made of wires, iron or steel wires, mostly to make the connection between the atmospheric electricity and the soil, and then it was connected with a wire to the soil. And then he discovered that if he put a wire in the north-south direction, that he couldn't that he could distribute the energy a lot further away than just close to the antenna. Because before Christophe Lowe, there was L'Abbé Poulain in 1894 around. He was an official researcher. He was director of an agricultural school in France that is all still exists and still is quite famous in agriculture. And he did some research and he connected just wires, but that went to all directions around. And already like this, he could increase the range or the influence of an antenna. He could like this have really an influence like even to 1 hectare or 2.5 acres with an antenna of 12 meters high, at 12.5 meters high. But that was really the biggest influence possible that he measured. But mostly with an antenna of 10 meters high, for example, or 12 meters, you will have an influence that is similar to the height, with a radius similar to the height. But sometimes, maybe because of the proper location or the good way of doing it, or maybe some geobiology to put that on a proper location, sometimes it can have really a lot more influence on the area. And Christophe Lowe, he did similar thing. He put a pole and then a wire direct to the north of the Earth. So really in the north-south direction, like we see with a compass. And then he could distribute the energy even 1 kilometer away if we want, or 100, 200, 300 meters away, even with an antenna of 6 meters high. And but in reality, it's because he used also the magnetic field of the Earth, not only the electrical field. When we put an antenna, just a pole with wires in the sky, then it will use more precisely only the electrical field of the Earth. It will really communicate the electrical energy between the sky and the Earth. And that energy will radiate all around the antenna, also to the south, the east, the west, all around. But Justin Christophe Lowe, he put it also a piece of iron in the horizontally in the north-south direction, and then it creates an antenna effect with the magnetic field of the Earth, and this will have an influence only in the north-south direction, and that's why he connected to the north-south direction. But that's his invention or discovery. It's that aspect of the magnetic field of the Earth and how to resonate or influence or improve that.
Okay, so what I'm understanding is that you've adapted those two techniques. You've adapted Christophe Lowe's understanding and you're using them in two different ways. One is the magnetic antenna, which is collecting atmospheric energy, but then the other is the magnetic antenna where we run a galvanized wire in a north-south direction and we place a magnet on the south end, right? With the magnets also properly oriented, yes, north and south as well. We've seen you show us that, how important that is. So you seem to have broken down his work into these two applications, both magnetic and atmospheric antenna. Okay, so we've talked about...
Yes. Already, mm-hmm. already Christophe Lowe did this. In the beginning, he began in 1918 with the atmospheric antenna, and he ends in the 30s with only an earth magnetic antenna that he dig in the soil, because then he didn't need any more those poles that were very complicated to install, because in the past, he used wooden poles that were very heavy, so it needed a lot of work to install. It was problematic, or it was not easy. It was probably very expensive to install in that time. But now we can do it again with the local, with the modern materials. We can use like a telescopic pole that we can make very high, that is very flexible, that is very strong, that didn't exist in that time. And so use it again, that technique, a lot more cheaper than in that time. So it's a technique that is again interesting today to do, because it's we can do it easily. And also we can use natural materials too. We can even use bamboo that is very flexible and can be very strong and long, and make an antenna on top that is very lightweight, so it doesn't move too much when there is a storm, and it works very good also. It's quite easy to do. That's one of the most cheapest technique that you can do in a garden with local materials off the shelf that you can find everywhere, or you with pieces of wires that you can recycle or whatever. That's really the most easy and simple technique that doesn't ask money or really money to do it. You can even buy golden wires. It will be expensive, but if you just use metal wires that you find anywhere, it can be used all over the world, money or no money. It's about knowledge. If we know how to do, we can do a lot of things with very cheap materials. Mm.
Can you remind us of the importance of the magnets being ferrite magnets? Must they be ferrite? And what's the importance of that?
In reality, as soon as you put a metal wire, iron, that is ferromagnetic, that means that when you touch a magnet with an iron wire, the iron will become also magnetic. It will become like, it will act like a magnet. So that's why we call it ferromagnetic. If it's diamagnetic or paramagnetic, this will not happen. So copper, for example, will not be ferromagnetic. If you touch it to a magnetic, to a magnet, it become magnetic. It will stay copper. But iron will become magnetic. And when you put, a magnet is also our planet Earth. But the magnet of planet Earth is like half a ghost. Everywhere when we measure with the device, you will measure a concentration of the magnetic field of half a ghost. When you take a ferrite magnet, it's around 1,000 goes. It's a lot. It's like 2,000 times stronger than the planet Earth. But what we want to increase, or what we want to capture, or like an antenna, like a radio antenna, what we want to capture is the information of the Earth magnetic field. It's not of the magnet. It's not because we will put a magnet of 1,000 goes or 10,000 goes or to 20,000 goes that it will work better. No, it, it